As always, even though the music states two guys gaming, this is one guy reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this particular series, I am reading and reacting to Project Hail Mary, the book by Andy Weir. Did we decide? I think we decided on Weir. Since the first episode was about 3 weeks ago, I couldn't wait, and I ended up seeing the movie, but I will try not to let that color my reaction to everything, and because I still do want to do the movie versus episode for this, and maybe try to work in some other ones, like Jurassic Park and Dune. I feel like there was another one, too. Anyway, sorry about that hiatus. Those of you who listen often know that they happen somewhat frequently. And there have been even longer ones than this current three-week one. But I hope to get out the next two episodes of this before I go away to New Orleans next week. And then I can pick up with The Burning God and finish that one up by the end of April. There is a new list of books in the show notes for the rest of the year. I had to move some things around because the new Dragonlance book is coming out in August. So take a look at the show notes if there's a book that you were looking forward to see where it now is. I think that's enough for the intro. Let's get into the book. This is Project Hail Mary, chapters 9 through 19. Oh, I also condensed it down to three episodes, so I'm going to do chapters 9 through 19 this time and 20 through 30 next time. So this is Project Hail Mary, chapters 9 through 19, summary from supersummary.com. Again, they do not sponsor me, but if they would like to, I am open to a sponsorship. I just really like what they do with their summaries. Chapter 9, summary. Grace completes another spacewalk to cut a 6-inch sample of the Hail Mary's hull for the Blip A. Wondering how they plan to reconcile their two environments for the tunnel, since the Blip A's atmosphere is hotter than the boiling point of water, judging by the temperature of the cylinders when they arrived at the Hail Mary. Grace tosses the hull sample towards the Blip A and waves to the alien ship's hull robot, which waves back. Grace recalls another memory. On the aircraft carrier, Grace visits Dimitri's lab, where the Russian scientist has designed a spin drive engine that uses astrophage as fuel. The spin drive is extremely powerful, capable of melting a metric ton of metal in a fraction of a second. For redundancy and safety, the Hail Mary will have 1,009 small individual engines. Back on the Hail Mary, the Blip A approaches and uses its hull robot to attach a xenonite tunnel between the two ships, placed over the Hail Mary's airlock. Grace gathers his courage and opens the airlock to find that the tunnel is divided in half, allowing Grace to pressurize his half with the Hail Mary's atmosphere, and the Iridian half to be pressurized with Iridian atmosphere, since they are incompatible. Reassured, Grace takes off his spacesuit and enters the tunnel with no light but his headlamp. The wall separating the two halves seems to be made of many different metals, and as Grace examines it, he hears knocking from the other side. Chapter 10, summary. Grace sets up LED lamps in the xenonite tunnel to examine the dividing wall, and finds that one section of the wall is made of transparent material. A rock-like alien hand taps against the transparent section from the other side. Grace presses his face against the wall for a better look, but has to pull away as the wall is too hot to touch. The alien holds up a model of the Hail Mary and a model of the spacesuit to represent Grace himself, and gestures for Grace to return to the ship, which he does. Grace, thrilled by the encounter, gives the Iridian the name Rocky. Grace watches through the airlock as the Blip A's hull robot inspects his side of the tunnel. The robot removes Grace's LED lights and throws the tunnel back into darkness. Shortly after, Grace hears a knock on the hull. He retrieves a new lamp and re-enters the tunnel to find that the original wall has been replaced by a transparent divider. Rocky, the Iridian on the other side, resembles a five-legged spider made of stone and about the size of a Labrador, with a three-fingered hand at the end of each arm. Rocky wears dull, inconsistently shaded clothing, with a hole at the top for a small protuberance, but Grace cannot identify a head or face. Grace and Rocky wave to each other. Grace speaks out loud, absentmindedly, and is shocked when Rocky responds in his own language, which sounds like whale song. Grace sees that Rocky has left him a pair of spheres, one embossed with the Hail Mary, and one embossed with the image of the Blip A. Inside the spheres are ball and string models of atoms to represent the makeup of the respective atmospheres, which confirms that Iridian atmosphere is mostly ammonia and toxic to humans. Rocky has provided 29 copies of the ammonia model to communicate that Iridian atmospheric pressure is 29 times greater than Earth's, which means xenonite is extremely strong, since xenonite is the primary material of Rocky's poorly shaped ship. Grace pantomimes for Rocky to wait and retrieves an analog clock from the table. Grace, exhausted, tries to draw with dry erase markers on the surface of the clock to indicate that he will return in 2 hours, but Rocky doesn't seem to understand. Rocky gestures for Grace to press the clock against the divider wall, and Grace complies. Rocky does a jazz hands gesture that Grace interprets as positive. Rocky gestures for Grace to wait, that retrieves an Iridian clock from the Blip A. By comparing clocks, Grace and Rocky are able to learn each other's numerical systems and measurements of time and establish a shared unit of time. When Rocky returns to the Blip A momentarily, Grace circles the two on the clock face with his dry erase marker and heads back to the Hail Mary to sleep, hoping Rocky will understand that it will return at that time. Chapter 11, Summary. Grace wakes up from his nap, still tired, but anxious to return to Rocky, who has installed an airlock in the tunnel so they can pass objects across the divider. Grace attempts to demonstrate a tape measure, hoping to continue learning each other's units of measurement, but Rocky doesn't seem to notice the markings on the tape measure at all. Grace realizes that Rocky does not have eyes and instead uses sound to sense his environment, similar to echolocation, which is why Grace had to press the clock physically against the divider. In flashback, Grace accompanies Strat to court, where she is being sued by an intellectual property alliance for copying every piece of software and every literary work that has ever been copyrighted onto the Hail Mary. Got it. That brings me back. You'll understand in a few minutes. Strat argues that there is no way to predict what might be useful to the Hail Mary crew, and that they need to have the whole of human knowledge available at all times. Strat presents an international treaty stating that she is personally immune from prosecution for any crime anywhere on Earth, and strides out of the courtroom in defiance. Grace browses the software on the Hail Mary computer and installs a sound wave analyzing program on a laptop so he can learn Rocky's language, even though Grace won't be able to speak it and vice versa. Still tired, Grace also sets up a spreadsheet of Iridian time and glues popsicle sticks to the divider in the tunnel to represent what time he will return after sleeping, knowing Rocky will be able to sense the three-dimensional message. Grace also sets up a camera to monitor the tunnel from the dormitory before turning in. Chapter 12, Summary. Grace wakes up to a tapping sound, having slept long past the time he intended to return to the tunnel. He rushes back to the tunnel and finds Rocky waiting for him, seemingly frustrated by his lateness. Using the popsicle sticks to represent numerals, Grace and Rocky take turns speaking their respective words for each number, and Grace catalogs Rocky's language, which is made up of chords and whistles with the sound wave analyzer. One word at a time, they expand their vocabulary. Grace eventually needs to write a software program to facilitate faster translation, but Rocky has near-perfect memory. Unable to wait any longer, Grace brings a vial of astrophage into the tunnel. Even with their limited vocabulary, Rocky and Grace are able to confirm that both of their home stars are infected with astrophage. Grace eventually tires, and Rocky asks to watch over him while he sleeps. Grace takes the request simply as an interest in an alien life form and gives in. Grace duct tapes his bed to the tunnel wall and falls asleep again as Rocky works on repairs. Rocky and Grace continue to learn each other's languages and move on to units of mass. Rocky hands Grace a metal ball through the airlock and describes it as being 26. Grace, misunderstanding, thinks he must convert 26 of Rocky's units of mass into an Earth unit of mass and leaves the tunnel to perform an ad hoc experiment when Rocky steps away for a moment. When he returns, an annoyed Rocky explains that 26 means the ball is made out of iron, which has 26 atoms, and Grace's experiment was totally unnecessary to determine the mass. Rocky, tired, asks Grace to watch him while he sleeps in return. Grace suggests that another Iridian do it, and Rocky reveals that he's the only Iridian left of the Blip A's original 23 crew members, and all of the others have died. Grace agrees to watch Rocky while he sleeps, noting that neither of them is alone anymore. Chapter 13, Summary. In a flashback, Grace accompanies Strat to a maximum security prison in New Zealand to meet with Dr. Robert Riddell, an incarcerated engineer with an idea for generating the amount of energy that must be loaded into the astrophage to power the trip to Tel City. After a standoff with the prison guards over Strahd's refusal to be searched or surrender her weapons, they are taken to Dr. Rodell, who is serving time ostensibly for an accident at a solar farm he designed that killed seven people, but also for embezzling millions of dollars from the New Zealand government during the construction of the solar farm in Africa. That's really what they care about is the money. I don't give a shit about the seven dead people. Sorry for that editorial there. Rodell has designed a quote-unquote black panel solar energy conductor made of glass and anodized metal to breed astrophage and enrich them with heat energy. To get enough energy, one quarter of the Sahara Desert, about 2 trillion square meters, will need to be paved with black panel. Strahd agrees to transfer Rodell out of prison to design the black panel farm. Grace wakes up in the tunnel, where he now sleeps every night, while Rocky watches him. Grace, in return, watches Rocky when he sleeps, though Rocky sleeps much less frequently. Rocky has also set up a workshop on his side of the tunnel. Now confident in their ability to communicate, Grace and Rocky confirm that they are both there to learn why Tau Ceti is resistant to astrophage. When describing how each of their respective crewmates dies, Grace realizes that Iridians have no concept of radiation. Back on the aircraft carrier in flashback, Grace meets with Locken, who shares a new paper by CERN, the European Organization for Nuclear Research, on the energy storage properties of astrophage. Extremely efficient at absorbing energy, the astrophage have reduced the brightness of the sun so much already that the effects of global warming have been undone. Grace and Locken realize that astrophage can be used to protect the Hail Mary crew from radiation in space by creating an insulating layer of astrophage suspended in oil under the hull. Chapter 14 Summary. Still in flashback aboard the aircraft carrier, Grace attends a Project Hail Mary staff meeting to introduce Dr. Francois Leclerc, a renowned climatologist. Leclerc predicts that half the world's population will die within 19 years if the climate change due to the dimming sun is not mitigated. Already, Earth is experiencing natural disasters, including tornadoes in Europe, and Rodell's black panel farm has disrupted the weather and the Mediterranean. Since a minimum of 26 years is needed for the Hail Mary to travel to Tau Ceti and the Beetle probes to return, Strahd suggests that Leclerc devise a way to intentionally cause global warming and slow the cooling of the planet as the sun grows dimmer. In the present, Grace explains radiation to Rocky. The Blip A has no radiation protection at all, since Arid, as Grace names Rocky's home planet, has an atmosphere so thick that it filters out all radiation from their star, leaving the surface of the planet completely dark. Rocky, as the ship's engineer, was stationed close to the store of astrophage fuel, which absorbed the radiation and protected him. Rocky and Grace theorize on the similarities and differences in the technological capabilities of humans and Iridians, and Rocky posits that they may share some common ancestor, even older than astrophage. In the past, Strahd, Leclerc, and Grace observe from a safe distance as nuclear weapons are used to cleave a huge portion of Antarctic ice into the sea, releasing methane into the atmosphere as the ice melts. Leclerc is devastated. That's an understatement. Methane will eventually dissipate and is better for the atmosphere than carbon dioxide, but the drop in ocean temperature and rise in sea levels that the melting ice will cause are exactly the kind of ecological disasters he has dedicated his life to preventing. Leclerc and Strahd speculate that they will both end their lives in prison once the mission is complete, and despite Strahd's reassurance that there are no more dilemmas when the fate of humanity is at stake, Leclerc weeps when the nuclear explosions go off. Rocky and Grace discuss human and Iridian biology, and Grace learns that Rocky comprises mostly oxidized minerals and is comparable to an intelligent beehive. His muscles are steam-powered, and he has a radiator-like organ to help him maintain internal temperature. When Rocky sleeps, he's entirely paralyzed and unconscious, and because of this, it is Iridian custom to watch over each other while vulnerable and asleep. Rocky, meanwhile, is amazed that Grace can quote-unquote hear light. Rocky shows Grace a new device he's made, a spacesuit that will allow him to enter the Hail Mary. Chapter 15 Summary. The Blip A's Hall robot replaces the tunnel between the spaceships with a larger one, and Rocky navigates the tunnel in his ball-like spacesuit via handheld magnets and a metal stripe mounted to the wall. Inside the Hail Mary, Grace carries Rocky in the ball with the help of zero gravity, as Rocky weighs over 300 pounds despite his size. Rocky is thrilled by the ship and is particularly excited about the lab. Rocky decides to move into the Hail Mary so that he and Grace can figure out how to stop astrophage together. In flashback, Strahd introduces Grace to Dr. Lamai, the Thai scientist who developed the coma technology that the Hail Mary will use. Dr. Lamai is designing a fully automatic system to care for the astronauts while they are in their comas. Strahd asks Lamai to test her for the coma resistance DNA marker and insists Grace get tested for it too. as she plans to have everyone currently working on the project tested, since matches for the genetic marker will be so rare. Rocky brings a lot of materials to the Hail Mary, including the materials to make xenonite. Once Rocky is all moved in, Grace detaches from the tunnel, connecting the Hail Mary to the Blip A, and shifts the spaceship to centrifuge mode so that they can use the lab equipment. Rocky is pleased to learn that Grace has an external collection unit for sampling and testing the astrophage at Tau Ceti because Rocky was unable to repair his own broken collection device. Rocky explains that he has been alone at Tau Ceti for 46 Earth years, but that Iridians live on average 689 Earth years. Chapter 16 Summary. Rocky asks permission to build a series of xenonite tunnels through the Hail Mary so that he can travel freely in the ship. Grace agrees but explains that they need to work quickly because Earth is running out of time, while Aird's densest atmosphere has slowed the effects of astrophage. Grace also finally admits that he's on a suicide mission when Rocky references their return trips to their homeworlds. Rocky tells Grace that he is a quote-unquote good human for volunteering when he knew he'd never return to Earth. Rocky has more astrophage fuel than he needs to return to Aird, parenthetically, because of the Aridians' lack of awareness of time relativity, as will be revealed later, and parenthetical. And he offers to refuel the Hail Mary so that Grace can go home. And Grace weeps with relief. In flashback, Grace watches as the three chosen Hail Mary astronauts and their respective backups arrive on the aircraft carrier. The Chinese commander Yao, the Russian engineer Ilyukina, and American scientist Martin Dubois. The backup scientist for Dubois is Dr. Annie Shapiro, whom Grace recognizes from her breakthrough work with DNA. Strat informs Grace that he's responsible for teaching Dubois and Shapiro everything he can about astrophage. Grace introduces himself to Dubois, and Dubois mentions that he knows that, according to Strat, Grace also has the DNA marker for coma resistance. Optimistic, since learning he can return to Earth, Grace makes a plan with Rocky for studying the Tau Ceti astrophage. They set a course for the planet known as Tau Ceti E, which is the other pole of Tau Ceti's Petrova line, thanks to Rocky's extensive knowledge of the Tau Ceti system. Grace explains that on Earth, it is customary to name what one discovers. Rocky names the planet after his mate, but because there is no English or human word equivalent, Grace calls Tau Ceti E, quote-unquote, Adrian, in reference to the 1976 movie Rocky. Grace watches Rocky eat, despite Rocky's discomfort. To Iridians, eating is a private act, and Grace understands it when he witnesses Rocky placing food directly into his open abdomen. Grace wonders if Iridian food will be palatable to a human, and takes notes on Rocky's biology as Rocky falls asleep. Chapter 17 Summary. Rocky and Grace arrive at the newly christened planet Adrian and quickly set to work planning an EVA to collect astrophage samples. In flashback, Grace tests vacuum-safe lab equipment at NASA's Neutral Buoyancy Lab at the Johnson Space Center, which is used to train astronauts in zero-G maneuvering. While the technicians make adjustments, Grace is sent to instruct Dubois and Shapiro about astrophage. Dubois informs Grace that Dubois and Shapiro have begun a sexual relationship, to Grace's embarrassment. I have no idea why they included that, other than just to make it weird. In orbit around Adrian, Rocky and Grace prepare to collect astrophage samples. Rocky has built a scanner that can analyze light and convert it to texture so that he can quote-unquote see what Grace sees. Rocky sends Grace on an EVA to get the samples from the external collection unit so that they can begin testing. Outside the ship, Grace is struck by Adrian's beauty and regrets not being able to remember a similar view of Earth. Back in the lab, Grace learns that the astrophage between Tau Ceti and Adrian are identical to the astrophage between Earth, Sun, and Venus. However, unlike on Venus, the astrophage population is not increasing on Adrian. Grace finds many additional extraterrestrial life forms in the traces of Adrian's atmosphere that are in the sample, and Rocky hypothesizes that another organism is a natural predator of astrophage and is keeping the population under control. If the predator can be found, it can be introduced to their home worlds to reduce the astrophage population and save their home stars. Grace and Rocky celebrate this discovery. Chapter 18 Summary. In flashback, Grace watches the launch of the final pieces of the Hail Mary, which is being assembled in orbit by the International Space Station crew. Dubois notes that it's good to have Grace there as a representative for Strat, and Grace realizes that he's considered Strat's second in command and the first officer of Project Hail Mary. In the present, the Hail Mary lab, Grace is able to identify an astrophage predator among the alien life forms in the sample of Adrian's upper atmosphere. Rocky hypothesizes that the predator may only live lower in the atmosphere, where the greater concentration of carbon dioxide creates the ideal astrophage breeding altitude. Using trigonometry and observation, yay math, Grace determines that the exact breeding altitude of Astrophage on Adrian, but it is too low for the Hail Mary to travel without falling out of orbit or burning up in Adrian's atmosphere. Grace dreams up a risky plan. Rocky will build a 10-kilometer chain out of xenonite and a sampling device to, quote-unquote, fish for Astrophage at the breeding altitude. To drag the sampling device through the Astrophage population, Grace will have to fly the Hail Mary at a constant velocity and carefully maintained angle, thereby avoiding both falling out of orbit and accidentally vaporizing the xenonite chain with the infrared thrust of the Astrophage engine. Rocky and Grace get to work building the chain. Grace wonders why Rocky has so much extra Astrophage to give him, and Rocky explains that the Blip A's journey to Tau Ceti took only 3 years instead of the expected 6 years. Grace realizes that Iridians have no concept of relativistic physics and thus do not understand time dilation. Iridians have managed interstellar travel using only Newtonian physics and Rocky's trial and error engineering. In the past, Steve Hatch, a professor at the University of British Columbia, visits Grace's office on the aircraft carrier. Hatch has designed 4 Beetle probes, each named for a member of the British rock group, the Beatles, using Komarov's spin drive technology. The Beetle probes, with no human occupants, will be able to return to Earth in just 12 years while only experiencing 20 months relative time. Hatch asks Grace if he believes in a higher power, and Hatch claims that Astrophage is God's way of handing humanity the future via clean, renewable energy. Grace is astounded by Hatch's optimism. Chapter 19 Summary. The enormous xenonite chain complete, Rocky and Grace prepare to fish for Astrophage at their breeding altitude in Adrian's atmosphere. With no way to accurately calculate the perfect angle for flight in advance, Grace manually adjusts the flight path of the Hail Mary until it is safe to lower the chain. Meanwhile, the Astrophage-powered engine superheats Adrian's atmosphere. Despite warnings from the ship's life support system about extreme temperatures, Grace puts his faith in the Astrophage cooling system to protect them, and the sample collection is successful. Grace must undertake a spacewalk to retrieve the sample dangling from the ship while under the effects of Adrian's gravity. Rocky makes Grace a special winch that will simultaneously wind and dismantle the 10-kilometer chain. Rocky tells Grace to be careful as, quote-unquote, you are friend now. While admiring Adrian's beauty, Grace successfully retrieves the sample with the winch. While trying to re-enter the ship, Grace is thrown to the hull when the Hail Mary suddenly veers off course. He manages to climb back through the airlock to find Rocky distressed in the control room, where the screens flash warnings. Rocky senses that the Hail Mary's hull is warping near the fuel tanks due to the immense heat and pressure caused by Grace's flight maneuver. Grace tries to get the ship back under control, but their velocity and gravity continue to increase. Grace realizes that there is a hole in one of the fuel tanks, and the exposed Astrophage fuel is migrating to Adrian, pushing the ship off course as the Astrophage departs. Under immense G-forces, Grace is just barely able to jettison the damaged fuel tanks before the pilot seat is torn from its anchors and crushes Grace against the monitors. Rocky leaves this pressurized compartment and rescues Grace, exposing the alien to Earth's atmosphere, and Rocky falls unconscious with smoke pouring from his radiator organ. How's that for a cliffhanger to end on? That was only supposed to be a 5 to 8 minute summary, but I believe in being thorough, and you can check the show notes for the timestamps to skip all of this if you so choose. This time around, I'm going to give my initial reactions to each chapter as we go through, and then I will do a discussion of what I saw as the major themes. I'll have a quick little discussion at the end about some of the quote-unquote problematic parts of the book that I've heard about recently or read about recently online, and then we will be done with this episode. My initial reactions from Chapter 9 were that we got the knock, which was pretty cool. He waves to the robot, and the robot waves back. I mean, I guess that's how he knew that the alien was friendly. There's the payoff. We get a little bit of a comic relief with knock knock, who's there, and I just kind of wrote who's there indeed in my notes. Chapter 10 brings us the puppet show, which I had forgotten about until I did the reread. The atom models that Rocky made to communicate. Rocky's language is completely alien. Well, not completely alien. He says it sounds like whale song, so I guess there's something there to work with. And we get jazz hands which I just wrote jazz hands with an exclamation point at the end here. So that's what I thought of that. That's one of my favorite things to come from the book. Chapter 11, that's when I said earlier, I had written in my notes that it reminded me of AI and I couldn't remember why, but then reading the part about Strat and the collecting all of the information, I was like, that's what reminded me of AI, because the AI bros are telling us pretty much the same thing, that we can't care about copyright in a time like this when we're trying to build this super duper AI that's going to save all of humanity, which it's probably not going to do, because everything that these guys build ends up being an absolute disaster after the advertisers and capitalism gets a hold of it. So I guess we'll see if the AI helps us or kills us. I also wrote down that I'm not prepared to save the world if I was in Grace's, because I'm just a math teacher. I have some understanding of physics because I studied physics when I was in college, but I don't know if I'd have the cool hand of Grace to save the world when all this shit ends up hitting the fan. Chapter 12, I said maybe I am okay, maybe I would be able to save the world. At least I figured out that the 26 was iron way before Grace ever did. The news of Rocky's crew, 22 dying, whereas only two died on Grace's ship. I mean, I know you don't really compare tragedies like that, but that plus the scene about sleeping when Grace said that they're no longer alone because they have each other, that kind of got me misty a little bit. Chapter 13, global warming has been undone. I like how he just drops global warming in there as a plot point without even arguing with people about it. I'm sure people have something to say about it, but it's just kind of in there like, yes, global warming happened, now it's unhappening, and you can deal with it. I also wrote the casual mention of particle physics in explaining some of astrophage and how astrophage works. I thought that was kind of cool. Chapter 14, I wrote, paving the Sahara was bad, who knew? Global warming is now good. So maybe there is some kind of debate to be had there. Of course, that's what people are going to get attached to. They talked about radiation a little bit, talked about how they may be related, which I think is interesting because there is that, what is it, Pan Terra or whatever they call it, where human life may have come from another planet. And then he talks a little bit about iridium biology, which I thought was cool that he came up with that idea while writing the book. It adds something to the overall story, I think, without taking up too much time. Chapter 15, Rocky weighs over 300 pounds. I had to pause while I was walking and listening to that so that I could verify it myself. And I just wrote coma. I don't know what that means. Oh, they talked about the coma stuff here again, and you know, Strat and Grace miraculously both have the genetic marker, so there you go. Chapter 16. All I wrote is that Rocky eats and poops. Gross. The way that they explain it in the book is way grosser than what they talk about in the movie, but I'll get to that. Chapter 17 is a huge turning point because they learn about the predator and how they can possibly defeat astrophage using it. Chapter 18, there's the mention of astrophage as an infinite energy source. That's one of the things that we hippies have been talking about quite often, is if we just had an infinite energy source, we probably wouldn't have to fight anymore because, well, there would just be energy and we could just do the things that we want to do and we wouldn't have to worry about it. Although I'm sure people would figure out a way to fuck it up and fight anyway. Chapter 19, I put the quote unquote, "You are friend now." I will talk about that later in my deep dive in about 2 seconds after I talk about the good news, bad news. They collected the sample, but the ship veered wildly off course and injured both Grace and Rocky. And as I said, that is one hell of a cliffhanger to end on, right now, but fear not, it won't take another 3 weeks to get to the final chapters of the book. And now for my discussion of the major themes. They won't come as a shock if you've read the book or seen the movie and are able to think about it for just a little bit. The major theme of this part of the book is friendship, and then I put with a side of hope and even a little luck. I was on Reddit, I think it was, and they were talking about sci-fi movies in the past, and this particular sci-fi movie and the other sci-fi movies were like about existential crises about something, and this one was basically, hey, we defeated the evil bacteria with friendship, which is obviously an oversimplification, but also it's pretty cool how for somebody like me who wants to believe that we can fix things by working together, that the two of them are able to do just that by building on their mutual vulnerabilities and their lack of understanding of each other initially, especially on Grace's side, where he doesn't understand why Rocky wants to watch him sleep, etc. He's got to figure out how to speak Rocky's language, whereas Rocky, because he relies more on sound, he's able to quicker pick up on human language, English, than and understand it. It's a practical friendship at first. They understand that they are both in the same place, and they are the reason that they watch each other sleep is because it is necessary for survival in Iridians, not because they are interested in each other necessarily, although they are interested in each other and they want to learn about each other. It's because Rocky needs him to watch him sleep, because that's what they do in his homeworld of Arid. And Grace goes along with it because he understands that he's going to need Rocky's help. But then it becomes emotional, where you get those beats where Grace says, we neither one of us is alone now because we have each other to help one another out and look out for each other. And then Rocky drops the quote-unquote, you are friend now bomb, which kind of cements it that these two people, aliens, have gotten together and gotten over their differences to work together and eventually live together, and even probably going too far here, but even love one another. I mean, they show their love later on, even if they don't ever say it. I don't know. The whole thing works because they respect the differences as opposed to erasing them. I think that our current administration, especially a certain Nosferatu-looking mofo, can learn from this, that you can learn from other cultures instead of trying to erase their culture and replace it with your own culture. I mean, we've made this colonization mistake how many times, and we continue to make it, and people continue to fight back. And there's still those who think that if you're just strong enough, you can usurp an entire culture and replace it with your own. And it's just a ridiculous concept, and I wish they could get it through their thick skulls that it's never going to work. Okay, sorry. Not sorry. You know what? No, I'm not sorry. Fuck that. It's stupid, and they need to learn. And if they don't learn, they need to get the fuck out of the way and let people who are trying to fix it actually work together to fix it. And I guess that leads to hope. What is it? The audacity of hope? Is that what we went with way back when during the Obama years? I think that's what they called it, the audacity of hope or something like that. Hope is a difficult thing to maintain, especially when things look so bleak and dark as they do right now. For those of us who want to work together and want to push humanity forward into new and exciting realms that don't involve the utter destruction of the entire world. I mean, not the world. We won't destroy the world. We'll destroy the world so that we can't live there anymore. And but that's a less catchy slogan than save the earth. Save the earth so that humans can continue to live is just a little bit too long. So we just shorten it to save the earth. But I continue to have the hope that we're going to figure it out in spite of the fact that every day gets bleaker and darker, and then there's like a little glimpse of something, and then it just gets crushed under the weight of the reality that we are being run by a suicidal cult that hopes to meet Jesus someday. Anyway, I wrote in my notes, and I don't think I said it. I must have missed it, but I wrote in my notes, I want to make a I'm with Leclerc t-shirt and wear it around to see if people understand the reference. I know it's nerdy and stupid and whatever, but that kind of fits in with all of this. The reason that I chose this book also has to do with the hope in the book, because I was reading The Burning God, and with everything that's happening, as I mentioned numerous times during that book, it got me down pretty hard, and I needed something to bring me up and remind me that people can be good and people can be helpful, and sometimes you just need a stone spider with five legs to come along and remind you that things are going to be okay. And so the hope is also paid off in the book too. It's not that they're just hopeful. They are hopeful, and they use that hope to problem solve. And by figuring out the problems and working together, collaborating, they get small wins over time that can eventually add up to a big win at the end. So it's not just like, hey, they saved the world. It's they're working to save their worlds, and then they'll get the payoff later on. And the ultimate sort of hope for Grace, at least, who thought he was on a suicide mission and fought through it, now gets his hopeful moment that because of an error, not really an error, but just a miscalculation on the part of the Iridians, Rocky has a ton more fuel and he can give it to Grace, and Grace can go home. I mean, goodness knows what he's going home to, but you always want to at least return to that place to see things that are familiar and things that you recognize and things that you understand and that can hopefully ground you. Also, you want to see if everything you did actually worked, and if there are still people and how they are getting along, if they've learned from their actions, as I hoped we might from COVID. That's what I go to now. Anytime people talk about these kinds of things, is I go back to COVID and I'm like, we couldn't even figure that out. Like, how would we honestly figure all of this out if something like this were to actually happen? Like, you would have people just denying that it was even. Anyway, hopeful. We're hopeful here. And so we got friendship with a side of hope and a little bit of luck. Both of them are absolutely lucky. It's not necessarily convenient. I get, what did they say? Luck is preparation plus opportunity or something like that. Like, so, I mean, you could call it luck, I guess, but you could also just say that they're prepared for things, eventualities that end up happening, and because of that, they get out of the situations. The relativity misunderstanding, giving Grace fuel, is that an example of luck maybe that's too neat, or can we work within the logic of the story to say that, sure, this group can figure out interstellar travel without knowing relativity, and that they'll experience less time as they, you know what? It says something about how, like, they can't even see through their atmosphere. Well, they can't see anyway, but their atmosphere is so thick that they don't know what's out there. So why would they even bother with space travel until they figured out that there was something out there, this astrophage that was killing their planet? And then they have to figure it out, and they have to figure it out relatively quickly. So why would they even bother with relativity, or why would that even come up? Who knows? There are unlucky. I mean, Rocky himself is lucky, quote unquote, because he was saved by Astrophage. I thought that was kind of a cool way to explain that astrophage absorbs radiation. Of course, it absorbs radiation because it absorbs heat. So it would almost be natural that it would absorb some measure of radiation as well. The final question, I guess, is does the book rely too much on coincidence, or does he earn every breakthrough the way that he writes it? I personally think that, yes, while there is luck involved in the book, it's, as I said, more the opportunity meets preparation type of luck instead of just dumb luck. Although there are some dumb luck in there too, I guess. If you took enough time and you sat down and you thought about it, you could probably explain away most of it. All right, finally, I wanted to end with what I'm seeing also online. I know I should not worry about what's online, but I do try to take in other viewpoints and figure things out that way. And I have seen some critiques of the book and the movie, some problematic sides. They talk about it in the terms of being a white savior story, where Grace is the last human standing after the multinational crew dies off screen. I've seen the cool white guy who solves all of the problems and saves the world, which I guess could be problematic to those who don't identify with him. I mean, I've also seen some things about problematic inserts for authors, and this feels like one of those where Weir is throwing himself into this situation and saying, "Hey, I'm a cool guy, science teacher, former PhD, who is just funny enough to figure these things out." And yeah, I can understand it. But it's primarily Grace's plans in the book that ends up solving things, which again is, it feeds into that whole narrative. And finally, Strat taking complete and utter control of everything. It smacks again of that colonialism where there's only one person who can possibly make this decision because they're such big decisions and you don't want people fighting over them. And, Leclerc, if it were up to Leclerc, we wouldn't bomb Antarctica. I mean, I'm sure we could have come up with another thing besides dropping a nuclear bomb on Antarctica, but who am I to say? I'm not Strat. However, I mean, Rocky is not helpless. He does teach Grace things like Xenonite. He comes up with the Predator. He is a magnificent engineer and builds all of the things very quickly. So it's not like he's completely helpless. And I guess you could also frame it in that Grace probably wouldn't figure it out half the stuff. Like, Rocky knows a lot about Tau Ceti and the system, so he's leaning on Rocky's experience and Rocky is leaning on his experience, so you could almost frame it as that. I mean, the fact that he's a white guy, maybe that just bothers people, which I can understand again. Rocky also saves Grace's life, including this most recent cliffhanger, just to remind you again that we're leaving on a huge cliffhanger. Rocky has a life outside of Grace that he talks about, and Grace actually feels kind of bad that he never considered that Rocky might have a mate back home, or that Iridians might have a culture outside of what he sees with Rocky and that sort of thing. So Rocky is not this two-dimensional thing just to be there to help Grace. He does have an entire world around him that he does talk about and that Grace learns about. So I think it's genuinely about the friendship between these two. And yes, you can say that why is Grace white other than the fact that Andy Weir is white and he knows how to write from that perspective. Like, trying to write a female protagonist or something else may not work out as well for him, and that's why he chose this particular protagonist. I mean, also just Strat, I mean, completely immune from prosecution. Like, have we not learned that you can't just put one person in charge of these huge issues and expect it to work out okay? Like, yes, they can make the decisions very quickly, but a single person, most of the decisions are going to be very stupid, and somebody's going to have to be around there to tell you this is stupid, we need to do something else. I mean, that's born in the Antarctic sequence, like I said. If there were more people to discuss it, they probably could have come up with something. Like, Leclerc could have had his words heard instead of just sitting there crying while this woman blows up half of the Antarctic continent and destroys his life's work. Again, she does admit that she's probably going to go to prison at the end of all of it once people come to their senses, quote unquote, in the afterwards. So I guess that's some reckoning that she knows she may have to eventually deal with. Now, none of this ruins the book for me or the movie for me. I still enjoy both. I just know that it's better to recognize the weaknesses of something and to try to work your way through it as opposed to just saying, this is the greatest book ever. I mean, one of my kids did say, and one of his friends said that it was probably one of the greatest movies that they've ever seen, which is not wrong, but you can still have the greatest movie you've ever seen and understand that parts of it can be potentially problematic for others. This entire section is the reason that we read the book. Sure, it's fun learning about Grace and what he did in the past, but the power of friendship through understanding and working together, collaboration, cooperation is exactly in my wheelhouse, and it just hits really hard right now at a time when we need that collaboration and we need that cooperation and we need to work together to build our communities up better and stronger so that something like what is happening right now will never happen again. We said never again. Well, we didn't say never again, but they said never again. And it very well is happening in other places and could happen here. So I take this hope and I go forward, and I hope you take this hope and you go forward and we can figure this out together. So now for an awkward transition, I suppose. In the next episode, we will finish up the book with chapters 20 through 30, the rescue, the plan, the ending, all of it. Can't wait to get to that part. I don't remember that part being as much fun as this part, but I think there are some things in there that we can pull out and have some fun with. Thanks for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. I just did a couple of silly articles for Mario Month, and I've been doing the season 2 of Fallout. I finished that up last week or the week before. Those are the only articles that I'm doing right now because I'm focusing more on this podcast that you're listening to and also getting back to my YouTube, which was on hiatus for a couple of weeks as well. I got into a loop where I wasn't very productive, and then I thought I had lost my dongle for my headphones. So I'm back though, and I should be able to get things going this week. Next week will be a little spotty at the beginning of the week because we're going to New Orleans, like I said, but then after that, I will get back to bringing you all of these things. In closing, I want to ask you a question. What is your favorite moment so far? You can drop it in the comments. You can email me. You can find one of my TikToks, NoobDad76, or YouTube videos, NoobDad131, and contact me there. I will talk to you hopefully in a couple of days for the final episode of this series. Bye, guys.